Yo, what's up, you cows? You know what it is, man. It's your boy, the Kid Merrill, and this is Victory Light. You know what I'm saying? The number one podcast on the planet. We got our two shooters with us today, of course, Rainey and Liz, and a very, very special guest in the building. Cool Bob Love, a.k.a. Bobito Garcia, a.k.a. Bob from Stretch and Bob. You know what I'm saying? We talk about New York City basketball culture, his new book, Bobito's Book of B-Ball, Bong Bong, you know what I mean? Hip-hop, the evolution of the game, the evolution of the music, and what you should do before you go to college. Stay right there.
A victory light. A victory light.
Yo, what's good? You know what it is, man. It's Victory Light. It's your boy, the Kid Merrill, the human durag flap. Of course, in the building, we have the one, the only, Lizbel Ortiz, La Matatana, the super bitch of New York City. You know what I'm saying? And on this side of me, you know what I'm saying? I got the Yap God, Yapaholics. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Real Yap shit.
Real Yap shit. You know what I'm saying? He might have tattooed some cherries on your titi's back. You know what I mean? Back in the day.
It's true. I was there.
You know what I mean? He really did. You know what I'm saying? It's not a rumor. And today, you know what I'm saying, it's very special because we back in the studio, goddammit. We feeling good. The lighting is sexy because we got a very sexy guest. This guy is a legend in two games. I'm not even going to say like Pee-wee Kirkland because he might be even more popping than Pee-wee. If you a man like me or a woman or a they or that, whoever you are, if you were introduced to your Mount Rushmore of hip-hop, this is the guy that did the introducing. He made them freestyle on the radio for you. You know what I'm saying? And then he had Lord Seal make fun of them. You know what I'm saying? The Mount Rushmore of episodes. He's the voice of New York City street ball. You know what I'm saying? From documentaries to your console at your crib. You know what I'm saying? Even if you're a suburban little, you know what I'm saying, Chad, you've heard this man's voice. You know what I mean? This is the five borough Boricua. You know what I'm saying? All city king. Cool Bob Love, better known as Bobito Garcia. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
Motherfucking New York legend, baby. You know what I'm saying?
I appreciate it.
Welcome to the show,
man. Much love to my brother Pee-wee Kirkland, man. That's a true legend in two games.
Yes, sir.
I might have to thank you for, you know, throwing me in the announcing sort of, you know, hierarchy, but I think in the sneaker world I might just be a little bit of a
you there.
You know, historic cat in that level too. So
you there? Yeah. We gonna get into that because you got whole books and documentaries and pieces of you're a historian, bro. Like you know, people be like, yo, this person is the culture, bro. They rep the culture. Da 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 da. I'm like, bro, y'all use the word culture too much. I don't know if you're talking about probiotic yogurt, hip hop. Like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? But when motherfuckers talk about culture, you are the culture, fam. When it comes to like sneakers, hip hop, just New York City, bro. Like, if you could put New York City in a petri dish, Cool Bob Love, the Cool Bob Love virus would be released into the world. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you for being with us today. We appreciate
it. No doubt, Lisbel. Thank you, yo. Thank you for the invite.
The book is beautiful. I got to tell you that. The book is gorgeous.
I appreciate that. For those who don't know, it's Bobito's Book of B-Ball Bong Bong.
Yes, sir.
It's a memoir. It features 30 years of my 35mm photography. I've been shooting on the courts, you know, for decades now, and not a lot of people know me for that. But this book is not only my memoir, but it's also like an art book, you know, showing like 2-page spreads of my photography, Harlem, Brooklyn, Bronx. And then also it's kind of like a statement of New York City playground basketball history from the 60s to the present. So it's like a, Merrill, you mentioned triple threat. That's what my book is. Pass, shoot, and dribble from the position of holding it like that, you know?
Yeah. You bringing that up is very interesting too, because some sections of it read like a textbook. It's like a history of basketball from like a teaching perspective, like especially in the chapter about Harlem plays the best ball in the world. You break down like the origins of like, oh, these guys went 88 games straight in the 33 season. There's sort of an academic appreciation for basketball as well as like just your overall passion and like love of the game.
Fam, you spot on, and I'm proud for you to say something like that, because all of my books, I've written three, right? One was fiction that was for kids called Aim High, Little Giant, Aim High. But my first title was Where'd You Get Those? Sneaker Culture 1960 to 1987. This one is Bobito's Book of B-Boy Bong Bong. Mm-hmm. But in each of those two cases, I wanted people to look at them as textbooks.
Yeah.
But I wanted to write them in my natural New York voice, mm. you know, Latino, Boricua, raised on hip hop, so that a cat like yourself or anybody in a BX hall, whatever, they can read it and be like, nah, I don't feel like I'm in the classroom right now. I feel like somebody's talking to me.
Right.
And so I got to big up Edge of Sports / Akashic, because the publishers, they gave me that creative license. I mean, it was really a a negotiation point for me. I was like, yeah, I can't rock with y'all unless you allow me,
right.
give me that rope to just be like, to say yo,
right.
mm-hmm. or to say lo de hope like out. It's just Spanish comes in, slang comes in. But if you're not from any of these worlds,
yeah,
you can still read the book and crazy understand it. Because as a writer, I was very strategic in terms of providing a context so that people, because if I say, oh, he yummed it on him, like, you still understand what that means from the context.
Right.
You
know?
Yo, that's super important, because like this is three Dominicans over here, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of times we go into like these riffs and runs of like, oh, you're loco, that's how I am, suelta eso, you know what I mean? And then we being cognizant of like, yo, hold on, not everybody that's listening to this shit is gonna understand what we're saying, so we go back and hit them with the Spanish lesson of the day, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
A lambong is somebody that shows up. With a Dutch and no money for the eighth. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, you want to hear something funny that reminds me? So I was a host / creative producer on a TV show called It's the Shoes back in 2005 on ESPN. First series in media history about the culture, right? I'm not talking about probiotic culture. I'm talking about
real culture. <Right.
laughs> Sneaker culture, right? I would, you know, be interviewing Fat Joe or Carmelo Anthony or, you know, whoever. And I would just be in my lane talking to them, yo, let it. And so the producer, he was like, yo, Bob, like, this is going to 80 million households. You know, we got to make it, and this is what he said, we got to make it dummy proof so that anybody, it can't be inside baseball.
Right.
It's like anybody could understand it. I said, cool. He just said it once. And then from there, I was like, okay, cool. If I'm going to say, you know, la, 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 I'm going to make it. Them understand that la 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 means this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So you got into a little bit about like how you decided to keep your voice in throughout the text, and I just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about that. Like, you kept a lot of slang in the text, but did you and your editors ever butt heads? Like, were there ever moments of tension? Like, how did you decide what to keep specifically versus like what to sort of clean up present more?
No. Yeah, no doubt. No butting heads. You know, Dave Zirin is the head of Edge of Sports. That's the imprint on Akashic Books, which is the publisher. He's an author. You know, he's written over 10 books about sports, time, social justice. But he's from Queens.
Right.
Played against Kenny Anderson as a kid, you know.
Mm.
And he was a columnist for Slam Magazine as well for years. Legendary. You know what I'm saying? His columns was crazy. So he understood where I was coming from, and the publisher, Johnny Temple, we went to Wesleyan University together. I know you went to Williams, you know, but I know dude since the 80s. I know him for 40 years.
Wow.
So I didn't walk into that space with any resistance that, you know, like anticipating like, oh, they're going to have pushback. Mm-hmm. Now, the original manuscript was 85,000 words. And they were like, yo, like,
damn.
you gotta peel this back.
Yeah, wow.
You gotta peel this back, you know? And it was it wasn't pushback, but there was one chapter where I'm talking about my struggle with my college coach at Wesleyan, right? And they were like, yo, we wanna cut this all together. I said, nah, you can't cut that, because you gotta understand the mud that I was in, quicksand, for you to appreciate when I'm at the top of the game and I'm now traveling and I'm, you know, I'm on television and all this other stuff. So it's part of the journey,
right?
Ain't nothing cute. So, you know, they were like, all right, cool. So I was like, I'll cut it. I was my own editor.
Oh,
I chopped like 22,000 words out of the manuscript for us to get it to like that pristine, you know, level of like, okay, here's the strong, you know, if you're making a soup, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You take your best vegetables, you know, and when you chop and you know, yo, this this looks a little moldy here. Let me put this in the garbage. So that's what I did. I just cleaned it up, got it tight for them. And then they did the copy edit, make sure the grammar was right. And I didn't miss any I's. I didn't misspell anything. And then boom. And then we were
good. Bro, that's how I know you from the hood. Because you said, yo, when you get a vegetable that starts to get moldy,
you chop the piece off.
You cut off the moldy part. People are like, I just throw the whole thing in the garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
What's an ear of corn? $1.50? Who gives a crap?
This piece of this squash looks weird. Let's get this out of here.
It's a little soft.
We don't need that.
Yeah, no, come on. I don't want Tyler to get it.
Because the other day I was about to eat a mango, right? And it had a big brown spot. Right by the, you know, the part that it hangs from?
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, man, I don't want to throw out this, man. Mango's dumb expensive. So I just chopped off that part. And then the rest of it was juicy. I was good.
You're good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, speaking of the hood, like, all of us here are from New York. So obviously, I read in the book, I wanted to ask you about this, that on 9/11, you woke up to like a bunch of missed calls. I would love for you to tell us about that day.
That's emotional for me to talk about, you know, for any of us.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to my co-parent this week, in fact. You know, she's from D.C., right? And, you know, she was telling me about how New York has kind of like claimed 9/11, whereas like, you know, the things that they went through with the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the plane crash in Pennsylvania. Like, it wasn't just us.
Right.
But, you know, New York is the media capital of the world. So everybody's like, oh, my God. Anyway, you know. Basketball for me, right, my entire existence with it has always been a place of healing. Mm. Mm. And I say that in so many different ways throughout the book because, you know, I'm going through my quandaries as a high school student and then I'm going my struggles as an adult. And, you know, it's like always basketball comes back in as that sort of like spiritual guide to help me feel like liberated and calm. So I had DJ'd at APT, legendary venue. I had a residency there for 9 years,
woo.
Right? I was there Monday nights. Rich Medina was there Wednesday nights.
Hey, bro, you don't have to flex on us like that.
We put that club on smash. You know, anybody who was anybody in the dance world was at our spot, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was there Monday, September 10th, spinning. It's 2001. And, you know, as I would often, you know, going to 4 a.m., coming home, mm-hmm. eat my chocolate chip cookies, my rice milk, taking a shower. Now I'm going to bed at like 5 a.m. So, the next morning, I'm like, yeah, I'm toast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So my phone is ringing. I'm not hearing it. And then finally, I'm starting to hear it. And I finally answer it. And I'm like, yo, what's going on? Like, yo, Bob, you all right? Like, why? Like, what's going on? Yo, go outside. Look out your windows. I lived on 14th Street. Mm-hmm. I lived on the precipice of the border, right? 14th Street, below South, they had shut it all off.
Yeah.
Now, across the street on the South Side between 1st and 2nd was a 14th Street Y. And me and Ramon Rodriguez, who you may well know, he's a star actor now with Will Trent, but he'd been in Battle of L.A., Transformers. He'd been doing it. He was in The Wire. That's my man. I know him.
Southern Ramon.
Right.
Yeah, I know him for 30 years. That's my man. It's like my little brother. So I didn't know he was going to go to the gym, but that was our regular. Go to the gym, you know, to play ball. He was trying to, out for NYU at the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So it's like a regular, like scheduled kind of like thing.
We were just there every day. Like yeah. he worked at the 14th Street Y. Before he became an actor, when he was in high school, he worked at the 14th Street Y. He was a ball player. And me, that's just my regular, like, yo, I need to play ball.
Yeah.
So it's 9/11 and I'm seeing thousands of people on my street. They can't go south of 14th. The police got to barricade it off. And yo, it's wild for the night. My phone is going off the hook. People was like, yo, you all right, Bob? Da da da. You know, so it's 12 o'clock comes along. I'm like, yo, I'm going to do what I always do. Because this is mayhem right now.
Yeah.
Cross the street, go to 14th Street Y. Who's in there? Ramon Rodriguez.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And then another cat that's an LES legend named Joe Ski. Hmm. Played at the Rucker, played at St. John's. He worked at the Towers.
Wow.
And he walks in and the three of us are there just like bugging, But we just shooting jump shots. We didn't play no 3-on-3. We didn't play no 21, you know, nothing. We just shot around for like an hour, hour and a half, went back to the crib, and it was like, okay, cool. That's like, you know how people like be meditating, taking deep breaths? Yeah. That was my meditation. And I'm a storyteller. I've been hired by Nike, Wieden & Kennedy, EA Sports, yeah, for NBA Street Volume 2. If you see the Showtime film, NYC Point Guards, if you see NBA TV, Point Guards of PR, like I'm in all that. I'm a storyteller. Mm-hmm. You know, so I have all these experiences from my life.
Yeah.
Playing ball. And I try to take all those and just infuse them into the pages of this memoir, Bobito's Book of B-Ball Bong Bong. And some of them are heavy. Mm-hmm. And some of them are victory light.
That's right. Yeah. Talk to a vibe. Talk to a vibe.
That's what I'm saying. Yo, mashed potato.
Come on. Come applesauce. On.
Applesauce.
You know what I mean?
I think that's one of the most New York things ever of like, yo, this is happening around me, but I got to go to the Y. But I thought that it was so beautiful that you had a place of peace, you know, like a place where you could go where it's like, this is where I'm going to kind of like get my mind off of the problems.
My true sanctuary would not have been the Y. Mm. I would have gone to Thompson Square Park, to the outdoor park, to the outdoor court. That's, to me, that's the freest space ever. Like the Y, I had to pay a membership there. You know, I'm always advocating for people to, you know, play ball outdoors, you know? And so my home court when I was in the LAX was either Pitt Street, Hanfish, or Thompson Square Park. Those were my two favorite places to play when I lived down there.
What do you think is
But anyway, I couldn't go below 14th Street, so that's why I just went to the Y.
Right.
A victory light. A victory light.
As a ball knower. You know what I'm saying? Like this, I tell my kids all the time, I'm like, yo, when they like they shoot around, they practice and like my driveway and the asphalt is all uneven, it's all fucked up, the rim is mad tight. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, bro, this is where you should be practicing.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, Michael Jordan practiced on dirt. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, literally. Yeah. All these motherfuckers that y'all are playing against are playing in air-conditioned gyms with beautiful parquet floors, mm-hmm, with brand-new Ja Morant sneakers. Like, bro, here, to put on these hand-me-downs and go hoop. What is the difference between, like, that, yo, we playing in the gym and we playing outside? Because you obviously are an advocate for like street ball being outside. What does that give a hooper that you don't get playing in the gym and doing the drills?
Yeah, nah, no doubt. I mean, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with playing in the gym, because if you are going to, you know, go the organized route, you are going to play in gyms, right? But for me, you know, there's a paywall if you want to go to Reebok Club or LA Club. You know, you got to be a student to play at NYU or Columbia, Fordham or City College or Hunter College. You can't just walk up in there, right?
Yeah.
But with the park, anybody could be there. You know, from the moment that, you know, the city says, you know, we have granted you access to, you know, the gate. If it's a schoolyard, you know, it's not during the hours where the kids are in class because you don't want no predators out there, you know.
Yeah.
So the gates open up. Okay, cool. Now anybody can come out here. And that's, you know, when you play ball outdoors, You're getting a grit and you are getting a element of, it's like surprise, but also the ability to surf. You know, like if you surf it, like, you know, the waves are not flat.
Right.
The waves
right.
is like, shh. And that's how, when you're playing ball, like the courts are not always level, flat. So if you could dribble on a joint that got a little concave, you know, And still got your whip wop. Ooh, okay, boom. Uh-huh. Now you go on a flat and it make mass easy. You go on a rim and it's like 10 feet and like 3 inches on one side from the corner because there's a dip. The Parks and Recreation, they deliberately build courts to be unlevel so that the water, when it rains, it can go down the drain. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
They pitch
so
it,
you
yeah.
shoot from the corner and the rim is like wild high, but you still whap, whap, whap. Now you go to the gym and it's like, oh, this is easy. This is type easy. Like, you know, so it's all those things. And also, you know, in the realm of pickup, like if you go to Harrison, you know, on a West Side Highway or you go to, you know, the course by Yankee Stadium,
mm-hmm.
you don't know who's showing up. You ain't got no scouting report on them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You don't. You never. You may never seen homeboy. You may never seen homegirl. So how do you decide how I'm gonna guard this person?
Right.
And how are they gonna guard me? So you just it's the spontaneity. That's what I was looking for. It's the spontaneity that's allowed outdoors. That does happen indoors, but just to a different degree. You know, I just let it be. I love. I wrote about this in my book. You know, when I used to play at Thompson Square Park in the LES. You know, at the time in the 90s, pre-gentrification, you know, Avenue A and 2nd Street was like, that was the hottest corner mm-hmm. in the five boroughs for heroin.
That was Amsterdam, before Amsterdam.
B. Yo. And you had a whole...
Break it down for them, bro, Bob, because they don't know.
You got a whole community of people who were unhoused in the LES as well. And they used to play ball. I used to be at Thompson Square Park and be 5-on-5. And yo, you know, it might be two dudes who didn't even have a crib. It was, you know, squatters maybe, or maybe it was unhoused. And, you know, it's that element. You know, I've been playing with a priest on one squad and a corporate yuppie on the other side. Like, yeah, I love that, man. The park is so fly, B.
Yeah, it's a
park is so fly.
It's a melting pot in that way, right? And it's almost like you were talking about elements, right? It's almost like the elements that you can't control improve the elements that you can. So I wanted to ask you, speaking of an element you can't control, you talk about going to play basketball on Seaman and Cummings Street.
Crazy. Crazy.
Which also happens to be an element that you can't control. So I just wanted to talk to you about that and how I just want to get into Bob Vito's sort of head of what that sounds like. What that sounds like, and how hard was it to get your Thompson Square Park friends, to get your Y friends to be like, yo, come hoop with me over here, man. It's a, you know what I mean? I'm gonna go practice with my mans.
Yo, where we at, Bob? Where we at?
Oh, we over there on Seaman and Cumming, baby. Come
hey,
on.
Yo, like, hold on. What the fuck? What?
Nah, that's me, just the street. That's just.
Well, you said we gonna ball on Seaman and Cumming. What you trying to, like, what you mean by that?
Yeah. So Bob, man, I just wanted to get your perspective of like, was there like a 70s or 80s version of like, hey, yo, hold on, or like,
nah. Let me put this in context for you. I mean, when I'm playing ball up there, that's north of Dykeman,
right?
Yeah.
So I think it's called Inwood Park.
Yeah, very familiar
over there. That's dope.
I got jumped out
as well. You know, it's like right before you get to the BX over the bridge,
right.
on 215.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was 11, 12 going there to play ball. I didn't even know what some of that stuff meant. So like, it wasn't no joke to be had.
Right.
It was like, as I got older, I was like, oh dad, like I used to play ball over there and look at these names. Like, that's kind of wild, you know?
Yeah.
As a 12-year-old, I wasn't like, you know, oh my God, see, I'm playing on Seaman. Like, nah. I ain't.
Yeah, I'm playing on Seaman. It's crazy.
You know, like I didn't know.
Yeah.
Nah,
yeah, good parents then, bro. Cause I would have been like, yo, what's up? Yo, Jose came, yo, he slipped. Where he slipped at? He slipped on Seaman.
Oh, shit.
That's crazy,
nah,
bro.
Nah, he got caught slipping on Seaman. It's crazy.
Yo, damn. You can go to that corner. I mean, I hope they haven't changed the names, but literally, you can go to that corner right now. It's still there.
It's still there.
Should have the street signs.
Yeah, my cousin lives over there on 218 and Broadway, bro, right by the Twin Donut. You know what I'm saying?
So that's my childhood, you know?
Yeah.
That's you funny, B. Ain't nobody, I've been doing a press campaign for like 2-3 weeks. Ain't nobody asked that.
You know what I'm saying? That's right, because here at Victory Light, we ask the hard-hitting questions,
you know what
man.
I'm saying? It's light. Right. It's light. Yep. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So you had said in the book, like, you know, basketball, your upbringing kind of made you who you are, like your geography, you know what I'm saying? And I just want to ask you, what does each borough Bob look like? You know what I'm saying? Like, you came up where you came up, but what is Bobito come like? What is Bobito coming looking like coming out of Soundview? What is Bobito looking like coming out of Spanish Harlem? What's Bobito coming looking like out of Corona, Queens? You know what I'm saying? Like, who's that guy? Is it the same Bob, or is it like you got a little different source?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, rest in peace to the young brother who got shot in Soundview a few days ago, I believe. That was unfortunate. But, you know, I mean, I spent time in the BX as a kid. You know, my I have family up there by Taft High School in Sheridan Avenue.
Woo! Oh, nice. That's where I went. Taft in the building, baby. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yo, tell them what Taft stands for, bro.
Oh, nah. You got to tell them that. That's after my time.
Bro, this is crazy because this is being told to me by guidance counselors. They's like, yo, you don't want to go to Taft, bro. I'm like, why not? Yo, it stands for training animals for the future.
Like, what? Come on.
Wait.
That's crazy, bro. They had balls on the windows. Yeah. That was the school where they threw a teacher out the window, bro, because shit was getting staticky in there.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, I went there after the mayhem.
BX all day high.
That's where I go, yeah.
Yeah. And I spent time at Orchard Beach as a kid. And but had I grown up in Soundview, I don't know. I think... you know, and I expressed this in my memoir, Bobito's Book of B-Ball Bong Bong. You know, the Upper West Side was very particular in that, you know, we had a strong writers community. Mm. You know, we had a very deep Jewish community.
Yeah.
You know, we had a ton of Haitians, you know, coming into the city. Ton of Dominicans eventually, like towards the late 80s, but I'm talking about the 60s and 70s. It's heavy duty with Boricuas and you know, in my building alone, like we had people from Thailand, from Vietnam. They had businesses and
so Vietnam.
You know, I had an interesting childhood in that I was able to get a view of, you know, low income, middle income, and upper income. Mm. Just from my building, just being in the elevator going up and down, because it was a Mitchell Lama. We had a Mitchell Lama management, and so they had they had to have a certain amount of residents who couldn't afford, you know, public assistance. So it was like living in the projects, but living in a co-op at the same time. Like,
right.
It was just truly bugged out.
Yeah.
But I loved it. So, you know, I don't know how my life perspective would have been different had I grown up in Corona or grown up in Soundview. But I like to think that, you know, because of my parents giving me so much freedom, you know, I didn't know the term latchkey kid as a child. You know, I still kind of don't fully understand it, but yo, I was left alone in my crib, like at 4 years old, you know, like just, I think about my son. I'm like, yo, like, I mean, that's not a knock against my parents. You know, my pops, rest in peace. And my mom did phenomenal. Yeah. You know, justice to our family, holding us down all she could. But, you know, I was, you know.
Holding it down.
He was outside.
I wrote about this in my book. Like, when I went to Brooklyn Tech, I failed like 7 classes my freshman year because I was just cutting classes left and right. And my parents had no idea. I was just going to play ball. Yeah. I wasn't going out to be reckless. I was just literally just, I wanted to and needed to play ball. So I didn't have that like they wasn't like hovering over me, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And had I been in Soundview, had I been in Corona, I don't know, maybe, but I feel like I was already in my lane. Like I had real focus on who I wanted to be as a person, you know, as a student, as a ball player. And I would have stuck with that. I think no matter what neighborhood I would have landed in. Now you talk about El Barrio, like I spent heavy time there because my mother was cutting hair in a salon since 1957. They just closed it last year.
Oh wow.
So that's 60 years.
Generational run right there.
Yeah. Just yo, she had a crazy run right next to the White Park on 106 between Lex and Third.
Right.
So I'm spending time in the White Park as a kid and 4 years old. I'm just going out there and I didn't have a babysitter. It was like the dudes in the park who used to come in to get haircuts or their wife would come in to get haircuts. They looked out after me.
Yeah.
So I'm in the White Park being raised by the community.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I was just running around and playing, you know, wiffle ball and watching handball and hearing the conga players. And so I loved my experiences eating canepas.
Yeah.
You know, and on a block. And, you know, I got fond memories of growing up. My first pair of sneakers I ever bought. My mom's bought me was at Tom, Dick, and Harry's on Third Avenue in El Barrio.
Yeah.
You know, in my sneaker book, I write about that. So I'm planted and I mean, I'm Upper West Side, true and tried and true, but I have a lot of childhood upbringing in El Barrio as well. Yeah, you know, bro. So you could kind of say I'm part, I'm East Side and West Side at the same exact time.
Yeah, Bobbito, you're like the living example of like it takes a village, right? Because like you are raised by your community through and through, and there's so much of that peppered throughout this book, and that's part of why it was so interesting and so like engaging.
An important thing too on this show is like that we make sure we get everything right. You know what I'm saying? We fact check everything. So when you was just saying before, you were like, yo, I was just chilling in the park eating quinepas. Bro, they're not called quinepas. They're called limoncillos.
Oh, no. Here we go.
We're not doing this.
They're called limoncillos.
They're called quinepas, my brother. Limoncillos. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go to the other side with this one.
Está bien. Ya que feel however you want. The elder statesman of the show.
I saw a hilarious IG reel where they were saying the differences, you know, of the different names, and you know, I think that's beautiful. You know, I think you know, every community should speak their own language,
right?
Yeah,
and should determine how they identify.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Case in point, something that's huge in my book that no one has talked to me about that I want to bring up is the word street ball.
Right,
I detest it. I've never used it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. It's something that the corporate and the media world put on us, and then eventually everybody was like drilled in the head, and now, you know, a 16-year-old in the projects is like, yo, like street ball. But, mm-hmm. you know, up until like, you know, prior to, you know, 2000, basically, like nobody said that in the hood.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody would have dared say that. Like, nah, just gonna like, go play ball. Yeah, like, yo, we playing ball.
Yeah.
And then say, you don't have to put the street in front of it. It was like, yo, we're playing ball.
Mm-hmm. You think
B ball.
Yeah.
Basketball. Like, that's just what it is. So, you know, it's interesting to me. But I mean, you know, I always say like we as a people should determine, you know, it's the same way with graffiti. I was just watching somebody the other day, my man Keo from the X-Men.
Hey, shout out to Keo.
That's my man, right? He was like, yo, man, you know, we didn't call ourselves graffiti writers. We was just writers.
Yeah.
It was when they did the book, the Faith of Graffiti, that you know, the people who didn't understand what we were doing, they put the word on us.
Right.
Same thing with breaking, you know, b-boying from the Bronx. You know, it went downtown, and then they were like, oh, breakdancing. Like, nah, it's not, we don't call it that.
Nah. Yeah.
But now even like an OG, like legend, you know, has been beaten in the head. Like, oh yeah, like breakdancing. Like, nah, B, don't call it that.
Nah, I'm a B-boy. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to call it Lemon CEO, like, that's cool.
That's good. Nah, it's crazy because before you said about my group of my friends that were writers, I immediately went to like, oh, graffiti.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that's yeah, what my brain course. Immediately ran as a graffiti writer. You know
but
what
that's
saying?
Because where you from? Where we from? You know, we don't. Yeah,
a victory light. A victory light.
So listen, man, ball is life. Clearly, you know what I'm saying. Bobito's book of basketball. I said baseball. It's crazy. That's the Dominican coming out. Bong bong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
With the limoncillos and the baseball, always. Ball is life, man. And you talk about its impact on you. You know what I'm saying? How this hit me, because this is a real thing, bro. And if you're not from New York, you might not know about this. But if you are a hooper from New York, you know that you had the Olas under the jeans all the time, ready for a game of 21, bro. At any point could break out. You know what I'm saying? You was always ready. So I want to talk to you a little bit about like the evolutions that you've seen, because you've been in it, like you said, 60s, 70s, like. Historian of hooping in New York. Like, what have you seen, man, like over the years, like the evolution of the game in New York, like the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it? Because I got a whole little bullet list of like other questions.
That's a loaded question, and I think I feel confident that I was able to display the evolution of what I witnessed. Mm. You know, as a youngin, you know, just watching and then becoming a ball player. And then by 83, I started becoming an announcer. You know, so I haven't just played against dudes or played with. I've watched and I've done play-by-play. So I've seen, like, the steps, you know?
Right.
And certainly, like, in the last 25 years, we've seen, like, the curtain just be opened up. And now the rest of the world knows what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, it was like this clandestine movement, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, with the advent of social media, which has been beautiful, you know, a cat like Isaiah from Harlem, you know, he got the jelly.
Yeah.
Okay, now you got people in Japan doing the jelly.
Right.
You know, but prior to that, they may not know what that is, or they might have done it, but they didn't know what it was called. You know, and meanwhile, like, you know, prior to it be called jelly, it was the jelly roll.
Yeah.
Prior to that, it was the butter roll. Prior to that, it was the dip. You know, oh, he dipped it on you. Oh, he
pah. Yeah.
There's a whole right. There's a whole derivation of, you know, there's a whole legacy of that move, you know, dating back to the 70s. It might even be before that.
Right.
I know it from the 70s. You put the ball back here, like you're going to dunk, and then the last second you go poof.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the evolution, is that, you know, we are exposed, and now it's we welcome, you know, anybody from any part of the world looking like us, assuming our creativity and furthering it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a dope documentary called Handle With Care about the Nautic crew in Vancouver that Chris Paul was an executive producer of. You know, it's online and everything. I'm an interviewee in it. And but, you know, they in Vancouver and they doing wow ass moves, you know, but they inspired by the aesthetic of New York.
Yeah.
You know, and so New York is like the foundation. I said this a long time ago and it actually became a clothing line. But basketball was born in Springfield, but it was raised in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the evolution, right? The culture expands and you know, keeps on pushing the plateau of what it could be in New York and globally now too, you know. And it wasn't just New York, but New York is like where it was super concentrated.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You know, you buy like detergent and sometimes you gotta add water to it because it's so
that's what
New York is. New York is like the you know, the
concentrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, the concentrate.
Yo, you just need, you know, like, two drops of this shit.
Yeah.
You had Minute Maid, the orange juice that's
the frozen
drink,
that
you would never drink now because there's so much other choices that are way better.
Yeah. It's just like $20 for a dollar.
Yeah, yo, you keep
trying to let it sit in water overnight type shit.
New York City's like when you keep adding water to the Dawn.
The
dish soap. Just drop a little water, just shake that up.
Shake this shit up. You be all right, bro.
Yeah. Extend it.
Extend that shit.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring up, you know, like the evolution of the game and everything, because one of the most powerful quotes to me in the book is on Frankfurter's On the Beatbox, where you say the live recording of Flash's On the Beatbox was a litmus test to know who was down and who wasn't. And like Three's The Body Rock did the same thing for when you played somewhere else. So in the book, the quote ends with you saying you had to be inside the culture, living the culture to be up on it. Mm. So how, you know, it's just interesting to get your perspective now live, you know, versus like written in the book, because now you see it on your written all over your face that like, yo, this, like, it's pieces of the culture have survived the times. But like you said, with the advent of social media, so much of that has changed. And I think it's just a beautiful thing to have, you know, this text, you know, like detailing the history of the culture and like the fact that like there are people in it that were from it that are still putting time in, putting effort in to make sure that this is who we are.
Nah, no doubt. I mean, listen, you know, y'all do a podcast, right? You got your audience, you got your followers, you know, we as public figures, we have a duty,
right?
You know, and if, you know, Professor David Hollander from NYU, he's an author as well. He teaches a class. He wrote a book called How Basketball Can Save the World.
Yeah.
And he said, yo, Bob, man, you like the poet laureate. How you say that word? Laureate?
Laureate. I've been saying shit wrong all the time on purpose. I'd be like, yo, I said it wrong on purpose.
Yeah, like Limoncillo.
He said you like the poet. He said you like the poet laureate of playground basketball. And I really appreciated him saying that because of, you know, the stature that he's in, you know. Mm. But ultimately, like, if I'm gonna write a book, I gotta represent correct.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, that's you know, that's just always been my lane. Like whether it was sneakers or, you know, hip hop, me and Stretch on the radio, like, yo, we're gonna do a radio show, we gotta do it correct.
Yeah.
That's the conditioning that I had as a kid growing up in New York playing balls. Like, yo, you don't come to the park half ass. Don't half step, you know, Kane said, "Ain't no half step" in 88, but that was the model way before that. Like, yo, don't.
He just put it on a beat.
Yeah.
either do it right or don't do it at all.
Right.
You know? So
that's a fact, man.
I appreciate what you're saying, that B.
And it's ill because that's rare, bro. Like, a lot of motherfuckers just go out there and just do something just to do it and see what happens. But like, the reading the book, seeing your career, like your longevity, how you're still relevant in the space, people still come. You're like the OG of like this shit. You know what I mean? Like, when people, like you said, like, you're in so many documentaries, you're getting tapped for interviews so much because your knowledge is so deep, you know what I mean, of the game. And like, as somebody that, like, you know, loves basketball, you know what I'm saying? Like, I look at somebody like you as like a Professor X, like, yo, this motherfucker knows everything.
You know what I mean? Nah.
So every time I want to ask a question, I'm like, yo, I was like, I got a whole, like, because I tell the kids that I coach, like, yo, if you want to see basketball the way it's supposed to be played, watch the W. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Watch the women's game. Because they, like, that, like, they're really, like, this, like, the sets are there. Everything's clean. There's motion. There's ball movement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, all this stuff is going on.
And they, like, still got ISO as well.
Right.
It's like, it's mixed in.
It's
with the,
mixed
with
in.
The,
right.
With the teamwork.
It's a lot less hero ball. It's a lot less like, yo, fuck it. Like, I'm just bigger than you. I'm going to just yam it on you. It's more like strategic and game. Like, the bags are deeper. You know what I'm saying? In my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, from coming from where you coming from and seeing, like, the occasional, like, shorty out on the park hooping to now, it's like, these are mega stars, bro. Like, how, like, what, from your POV, what has that been like, seeing that, like, evolve and come up?
I love the fact that, you know, in 2025, we have cats that are balling, you know, with YouTube followers, like, in the 300,000, 400,000, half a million, million, and they're not trying to play in the NBA or they're not trying to play college. They just doing 1v1.
Yep.
And living off of that, sustaining, you know, feeding their family off of just playing one-on-one in the park. So that's beautiful, man. And that couldn't have existed prior to social media, right? So there might be people who will say, like, you know, the advent of the highlight kind of effed up basketball, right? Because, you know, all the networks were like, oh, you know, instead of, you know, 48-minute game, just taking, like, you know, the three top plays, right? Making them, like, bigger than life. Mm-hmm. And then the people who are, like, coming up are like, yo, I want to dunk. Like, yo, B, you haven't even learned how to lay the ball up verse yet.
You can't even do a lefty layup.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, but that's just what it is because everybody loves the highlight, right? And, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, we seek the guidance of elders and coaches and trainers, or we, you know, if you're just self-educated, right, you watch and you decide for yourself, like, oh, like, yo, I like the way she plays. Like, yeah, let me set a pick. Let me move without the ball. Let me play lockup defense. It's going to give me opportunities for offense. And you learn those things, you know, through playing, through experiencing. So I think there's multiple ways to look at this. And to me, like, ultimately, the bottom line is that more people are playing ball right now than in any moment in the history of the sport. And the crazy thing is, hasn't even reached its potential.
Oh, nah.
Damn.
It's just like the tip of the iceberg right now.
Yeah. Check this out, B. Basketball right now is the number one participatory sport in the world. It hasn't even reached its potential. That's mind blowing, bro. It's mind. More people play ball than any other sport. And imagine how much more can grow.
That's crazy.
And that's why New York is so important, right? Because everybody looks at what we're doing, you know, Zone 6 and Gersh and Brevoort and Dykeman and Rucker and Kingdome and my tournament, FC 21 All World. I do it in 30 international locations. You got Hoops in the Sun. You got West Fork.
Yo, shout out to Joe Cruz, Hoops in the Sun, Ocean Beach.
Yeah, happy 25th anniversary.
Yes, sir.
You know, their father was a friend of mine. May he rest in peace. Que descanse en paz. But, you know, it's like we doing all these things in New York that's resonating And the rest of the world is like, wow, like we want to do a summer tournament too. Like, oh, yo, we want to play pickup too. Or, you know, and it's growing, it's growing, it's growing. It keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, you know, I love the evolution that you sort of like are like considering here. Like we're all like, we're intellectualizing things that are just naturally happening outdoors, you know?
That's fire. So as a hooper, do you prefer to play 5-on-5, full court, 3-on-3, or are you just one of those dudes that's like, yo, roll the ball out, bro. Let's play 21. I don't give a fuck what we playing.
Well, in 2013, I started a tournament called Full Court 21 originally. Now it's called FC 21 for the very reason of my goal of inclusivity, right? Because if you roll up to the park and there's a 5-on-5, 3-on-3, you'd be like, yo, who got next, right? And it might be like three dudes who say, I got next, or now I had next. And then you wait in, and they may not put you down if they don't know you, you know, so you got to wait. But when you play, when Cass is playing 21, you roll up, you don't have to say who got next. You're like, yo, who got the high? 10? Yo, I'm jumping in. And you just jump in. That's an inclusive moment, yeah. Right? And it's not like it's a 5-on-5. Y'all played in 21s in Harlem with like 14, 15 dudes. You know? You know what I'm saying? We all playing 21 and getting double treated is mad fun. So, me personally, I love the freedom and the liberty that 21 gave me, because there's no coaches, no teams, no teammates. You ain't got to be mad at your man for not, you know, getting back and boxing out. Like, nah, it's all on you. So anyway, I came up with this concept in 2013. Shout out to my man, Manny Maldonado. He runs the Chosen NYC tournament. But he's the one that introduced me to Full Court 21. We was in a boys club in Harlem.
What?
And yo, B.
Full Court 21? Tournament.
Check it out. So he was like, yo, we about to play 5-on-5. We're going to do a warm-up, play Full Court 21. I said, word? I never thought about that. But yo, every change of possession went the opposite direction. Yo, that was a workout, B. That was a workout. And I was getting double teamed in the backcourt. I'm breaking that backcourt. Okay, now I'm dribbling to half court. Now I'm going back down. There's two more dudes down. I'm like, yo, the game is dope. Thank you, Manny. And that's why I always got to shout him out, because that sent a light bulb in my head. I said, yo, I'm going to do a tournament. No one's ever done a tournament, organized context of 21. Whoever has the ball, everybody else is on the court, is guarding up. No one in the history of the sport until me. 2013, I did it in New York for two summers. By 2015, local organizers in Japan, Canada, you know, LA, they hit me, Philly, they hit me. Yo, we want to bring it out there. Oh, what, cool. Like, you know, building with them. Yo, here's the rules that I devised. No outs. You know, my tournament, it's the only tournament with no outs and no three-pointers.
Ooh.
There ain't a tournament alive in the world that don't have a three-point line. I don't want people to shoot from deep. I want you to take it to the Baja, right. Yo.
Yeah.
So you break
yeah.
the double team, there's three more good defenders there, you know?
Yeah.
Show what you made of. I've done it in 30 international locations in the last few summers, but I've done it in over 40 cities at this point globally, including Africa, Asia, Europe, Latin America. Like, it's my tournament. And again, like, it hasn't even reached its potential, you know?
Yeah.
So every summer, all the winners from around the world, they come to New York. And I do the All-World Final at the legendary GOAT, a.k.a. Rocksteady Park, which is spoken about, written about heavily in my memoir, because that's where I grew up, you know? And it's my way of paying homage to the legend, Earl Manigault, which the park is named after. And so that's my favorite. 21 is by far my favorite. You know, 5-on-5 is, in a park, becomes a track meet. People ain't getting back on defense.
Right.
Half the squad is not even in shape. Yeah. They arguing because they don't want it. They stop trying to stop the game.
That's your man. We're not switching. You know? Fuck that. Nah.
Yeah, yeah. But 21 is less arguing, because it's like, yo, like, you, if you... If you tight, then just sit down. You know, take a squat. You want to call your girl. I was playing a 3-on-3. This is like when cell phones started. I was playing a 3-on-3. I forgot where I was. But this dude stopped the game to take a phone call. I was like, yo, that's sacrilegious. What are you doing, B? Like, we playing 3-on-3. Like, it wasn't an emergency. Yeah. Like, yo, my kid is in the hospital. It was just like, and he's just there talking like, yo, how you doing? And I'm like looking at him like, yo, like, you just
we warmed up.
You just disrespected the game, B. Like, yeah. You know? But, I mean, that's just what it is now, so.
Yeah. A victory light.
A victory light.
I saw you mentioned Africa, and you've done a lot of charity work in your life, just in general. But one of my favorite parts of the book was you had taken a trip and an 11-year-old girl had written you a letter about a pair of shoes that you had gifted her, you had donated, and she was in the position that she was, you know, she had lost both parents and she never thought that she would own sneakers. And that like transformed your mind. One of my favorite quotes was when you came back home, someone interviewed you and they asked you, what is the, like, what is your favorite pair of sneakers ever? And you said it's been the ones that you've donated, which to me was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, like, I know growing up for me, at least, because I'm a 93 baby, but growing up, I remember like the sneaker culture was so, it was so in your face. It was very, it was like people would buy things just to kind of stunt on you. You know, it was like a very egotistical kind of place. So to see you kind of grow up in that world and then say, actually, I've seen enough to know what's kind of important in this world.
Yeah,
I think that's
absolutely it's definitely you know, for those who have been to depressed areas or, you know, communities with lack of resources or, you know, kids living in poverty. And I mean, listen, I've been to DR, you know, I've been to, I've been to the favelas in Brazil, you know, I've been to the shanty towns in South Africa, you know, I've seen it. All the places that people will be like, yo, don't go there, I've been, you know. And it's incredible to see people playing ball outdoors in their barefoot, descalzo. You know, in the Philippines, the kids do it sometimes in flip flops, you know, or they play barefooted. But not everybody in the world could afford a pair of sneakers. You know, I remember being in Senegal. I was brought out there by the U.S. State Department to do a tour where we gave basketball clinics for free in six different cities. You know, and you know, I brought a bag of joints, you know, fly shit, you know, and people were like, yo, like, how you giving away them, you know, them Air Force Ones is only like one of five. And I'm like, yo, somebody's going to use these way more than me, you know, keeping them in my closet, collecting dust, right? And so, but I remember being like, dang, I don't even see sneaker stores out here. I don't even see sporting goods stores out here in some of the cities I was in. So how, where are they going to buy sneakers? You know, and it's stuff that we don't even think about, you know, commerce, distribution. And so, you know, traveling definitely allows one to open up their mind, change their perspective. You know, if you want to be mindful, you know, it's, there's no judgment on people who don't, you know, but that's just not where my head was at. Coming out of those trips, you know, coming back, and you know, I had always had I always leaned towards nonprofit work and, you know, social justice anyway. So when I was learning about Hoops for Hope and Soul for Souls and Samaritan's Feet, you know, and people, you know, visionaries like that who were like, yo, like, there was just a hurricane, we're gonna bring 3,000 pairs of sneakers out to, you know, such and such. Cool, man. Yo, here's a box.
Right.
You know? And just, you know, as I got older and older, and then once I had a kid, like, you know, being in a park with him and you know, can't keep your sneakers fresh.
Right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's hard. Like, you in the playground and he's, you know, in the sand castle and the sand lot and running around in the dirt and you just, you know, you got to pick up your kid and now you got sand on your sneakers and, you know, so it just became less and less important to me as I got older. And I'm not saying like, it's no judgment. This is just me. This is just my narrative, right? But I just got to the point where, like, all right, cool. I own four or five pairs of sneakers right now. Two I really play ball hard in. The others, other one I run in. The other two I just got on ice just in case if I need to be on camera for something where like people gonna see my feet.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, I let go of all my sneakers. All my one-of-one samples that I designed for Nike, Adidas, Puma, Piola, Prokeds.
Yo, hold on.
K1. I did six different brands.
Yo, Bob, hold on, Bob. What size you wear, Bob?
Now nah, they all gone. B, I let them go.
Yeah, go. Yeah, go. And yeah, I love what you said about getting use out of them. That's for everybody in the comments that be getting on me for my fried forces. All right, you heard it from Bob Beto himself said you got to get use out of your shit. You know what I'm saying?
You got to weigh your sneakers.
That's right. So I want to hear nothing else about Rainey's fried forces. Okay.
Well, shit. let me say that you know, I'm not. I mean, people look at me as an icon in sneakers, right? Because I was the first. I invented sneaker journalism, right? Yeah. I invent sneaker shows. Like, I mean, not I invent, but like I'm the first. I'm the face of that, the first ever, right?
Yeah.
And I'm so upfront that people look at me as like my word is bond.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean like just because I decide that it's not important for me to be fresh every day, that doesn't mean like if someone decides to do that and they can afford that, or if they want to collect sneakers just the same way they would stamps or comic books or coins or art, because they are taken out of the context of performance.
Yeah.
Like there's so much design that goes into a sneaker at this point, you know, and then the collabs with Lee Quiñones and the collabs with Hayes and the collabs with, you know, all these amazing artists and writers and, you know, and like it's, I understand it. That's not me. But if someone wants to put a photo on it, on a gram, and just keep the sneakers in a box so they don't get dust on them, then cool. If you want to resell them, I'm not mad at you either. That's not my lane. You know, I was never in hip hop for the commerce. I was never in hip hop. I mean, in sneaker world to resell. But if that's what people want to do, then yo, bless it. If you're having fun with it and you're making money, I ain't got no problems with you.
Can't knock the hustle. Is there
a I'm not knocking the hustle, but don't tell me that these sneakers are the greatest sneakers that ever came out when they ugly as shit. Just because you resold them for $1,000, like that don't make the sneaker hot.
Right.
It just make the sneaker, you know.
It's low, a dumb motherfucker demand out there.
Yeah,
low supply, high demand. You know, it's like saying like, you know, certain drugs was, you know, high demand, low supply, and then so they jacked up the prices. But that don't make the drug good for you,
right, bro?
To consume, you know.
Y'all paid $150 for this crack.
Yeah,
yeah.
That means it got vitamins.
So
is there?
Just think about that. You know, again, we intellectualizing right here. I appreciate the conversation, but. You know, I don't want to come across as like the old curmudgeon dude, you know?
Yeah, no, of course. But you got, listen, sometimes you got to say what needs to be said though. You know what I'm saying? But going off of that, like, is there, you, like you said, you have so many one-on-ones, so many collabs, so many.
Had.
Yeah right. Sense. Right, had. Is there one that you, that like stands out to you as like, yo, this was really important to me, you know what I'm saying? Be it for the cause, the design, the person, the team you were working with.
Nah, well, Lisbeth answered that. You know, like the section in the book where, you know, it's like the most important sneaker was like when I was in South Africa, or was it Zimbabwe? No, it was Zimbabwe. It was in Zimbabwe, and I had these Adidas did a collab with the NBA where they were doing like shell toes for each team.
Mm.
And they sent me the San Antonio Spurs ones. And it was cool. I wore them in a couple photo shoots, whatever. But, you know, I wasn't going balling them. So I donated them to Hoops for Hope. They sent them to Zimbabwe. And this was like years later, like I'm out there. And one of the coaches has some fly joints on them. Like, yo, them, in my head, I'm like, yo, them's just hot. And then I'm like, oh, shit. Those are the ones that I gave 5 years ago.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Wow. Whoa. You know what I'm saying? He got them on in Harare, Zimbabwe, my dude.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and he's just there joyfully, like, coaching kids, and half the kids don't even have sneakers or socks, you know. And it's like, I was like, yo, like, those are my favorite sneakers right there.
Mm-hmm. Of all time. Beautiful.
And it could have been any brand, any model, you know, it just happened to be Adidas. But, you know what I'm saying? Those, it's more the concept that I was able to give to the world, mm-hmm. and then witness it myself. Because a lot of times I've given out sneakers and I've never seen them afterwards.
Right.
It's like, now I'm on the other side of the world, you know, and I'm seeing the joints that I gave. Like, I was like, yo, that was trippy.
Being put to use. Yeah, that's nah, beautiful. Bro. And like you said, like, it wasn't about the actual tangible thing. It was about the story behind it and what happened after that. Listen, man, street ball, I mean, you know, we said it's been called that. It's just basketball that we play outside. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And, you know, I feel like there's New York City's known for, and like I'm sure you could speak on this at length. New York City's known for playground hoopers, like your Kenny Andersons, point guards, New York City point guards,
mm-hmm.
Rod
mm-hmm.
Strickland, you know what I'm saying? Yep. Like the list
is bananas.
Bananas.
The list is endless.
Endless, you know what I'm saying? What do you think it is about New York City that produces guys like that? You know what I'm saying? Dogs. The guys like Lance Stephenson. We seen Lance Stephenson 1v1, Mike Beasley, but
that was dope.
You know what I'm saying?
Dope.
And I was mm-hmm. like you said, like that was dope for the culture of basketball. But like, mm-hmm. what is it about New York City that creates these types of players, man? Like that now on social media they're doing memes about it. They're like, yo, this is what a New York point guard plays like. This is what a Chicago point guard plays like.
Yeah. I mean, I don't pay no mind to that because, you know, our game has been globalized, you know, so it's, you know, you could see even people when I was coming up, they'd be like, oh, you're a Brooklyn ball player, you know, rocks like this, but somebody from the Bronx, right? And it's none of that has ever been true. You know, people used to think Brooklyn is, you know, hardcore ball, but then you got Dwayne Washington, a.k.a., you know, Pac-Man, a.k.a. Pearl Washington. Like, he was as fancy as it came. Mm. You know, Fly Williams was as fancy as it came. They both from Brooklyn. Brownsville at that. So I don't pay no mind to that, you know, that geographical sort of like, you know, putting someone in a box. But I will say that New York has this folklore. It's got this history. It's got the crowd. You know, that's one of the biggest determinants of how people play. You know, because you got people on the sideline that are as knowledgeable as your top, you know, ESPN analysts when it comes to the breaking down the nuance of the game. Right, so much so that a player could be up top by the hash, go ha 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 ha, da, ba, da, da. Go to Baja and miss the layup, and a crowd is gonna be like, "Oh,
yeah, no! right."
We started that.
Yeah,
we started appreciating. Just okay, we don't care if you missed or not. We just care about the game.
Yeah.
We care about the style. We care about the culture. We care about the aesthetic. And so, you know, New York is hugely responsible for that.
Yeah.
For that sort of mindset being pushed forward.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, of course, it's better when the person finishes their homework. You want to see the person, you know, get the bucket. But it's like, yo, we appreciate ball handling regardless. We appreciate creativity regardless. You know, we appreciate the clap down defense, regardless. You know, the pass. You know, everybody talks about, you know, all these phenomenal ball players out of New York that make the NBA or, you know, the legends. But
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people don't mention Master Rob and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Robert Hockett from the BX.
Yep.
Played for the Harlem Globetrotters, played D1. This dude was like a mega legend at 55th. Like, if they announced that he was going to play, they would the next day the cats would show up by the hundreds.
Yeah.
Master Rob is playing, like, and yo, his IQ was just ridiculous, yo, ridiculous. I mentioned him in my book too. You know, I try to mention as many people that were influential in the book that either I played against or played with, or watched or announced.
Yeah.
So all of that is in the book. Papito's book of B-ball. Bang,
bang, bang, bang. You know what I'm saying?
Available at any bookshop that knows what time it is.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Hell yeah.
So, listen, man. We like to make motherfuckers laugh on this show. You know what I'm saying? And you gave
me all the game in the world.
You know what I mean? But we end it on a little bit of a lighter note. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a part of your book that talks about when young Bobito becomes
the man, Bobito.
The man Bobito.
You know?
Bobito Garcia.
So let's jog your memory a little bit. So what happened to Bobito the same year that he got into Wesleyan? what happened or what happened around that time. Maybe not the exact same year. Look at his smile. I already know. He knows. Yup, because this is a direct quote from the book, Bobito. Come on. You know what? Come on. Dímelo. Dámelo. Come on.
Yo, y'all did your homework, man.
Yeah.
Three of you, man, for real. For real. I've done a lot of interviews, you know, top level TV stations, you know, radio. Y'all did your homework, man.
Bro, we read the book.
We read it.
The other motherfuckers read the jacket. We read the book.
Yeah.
Nah. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I lost my virginity when I was 17.
Yes, sir.
And that was the same year I got accepted into Wesleyan University. So you all correct it.
What got you more hype?
Right. What got you more hype? Being able to ball at Wesleyan or?
Nah, losing my virginity. I said it in the book.
yeah.
Like, no. I mean, no. I'm saying it. I said it in the book.
Yeah.
When I lost my virginity, literally, after I BUST, my son is in the other line.
We got you.
After I released, yo, I was like, why is everybody so bananas about to be playing ball?
Yeah. Yo.
Oh, man.
Right. Now, you know, I know I don't want the person who I had that experience with to read that and be like, oh, dang. Like, damn. You know, yeah. Why is he,
whack.
You know, why is he trying to degrade me? It's just how much I love ball. I mean, now, you know, moving forward, as I learned what to do a little bit better. You know, it became more enjoyable, but the first time it was whack. I was like, yo, I could have been playing ball right now.
Damn,
you know,
bro. Yeah, man.
That's how you know. Look, you love the game. You're like, fuck this, man.
Yo, congratulations! You're the first interview to make me sweat in my forehead.
Let's go. That's what we do, baby.
Let's go, baby. You know what it is.
If my son wasn't in the other room, it would be different.
Hey, look, he knows how he got here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, that's not how he got here. I mean, that was in 1983.
Oh,
you know?
Shit.
He's only 11, so.
Oh, man.
It's about years later.
You've had plenty of practice since then. You know what I'm saying?
I had decades of practice before he came
before
along.
He pulled up. Yep.
Oh, man.
Playing 21, bro.
Yep.
Just the sperm in there playing 21, bro, with one egg.
Yep, full court.
Full court. Full court uterus press.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. Yeah, you know what the fuck it is, man. This is Victory Light. Bobito Garcia, like I said, man.
Yeah.
The God, you know what I'm saying? And New York City legend in hip-hop and hoops.
Yes.
Everything that starts with H, man. Hispanic, health, you know what I'm saying? His holiness, you know what I mean? De todo. El Boricua de los Burros. You know what I'm saying? That's what we're going to call you out here. You know what I mean? Yo, thank you for coming on the show. You know what it is, man. It's Victory Lights. Your boy, Kim Merrill. Lizbel Ortiz, the super bitch in New York City, La Matatana. She's on the rise, baby. She's hotter than lava. And we, on this side, we got Rainier Valle, the God. You know what I'm saying? He's hotter than fish grease on the fucking July afternoon. God damn it. He's popping. Yapaholics, trapaholics. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to sign off with the legend, Bobito Garcia. Anything you want to tell the people, my man, before we dip?
Yo, just I got to express gratitude to the fullest, to the three of you, to Patricia as well, to Ming and Hassan on the cameras and everything, the production. But also, people, my handle is Cool Bob Love, KOOLBOBLOVE. That's Blue Sky, Twitch, Patreon, IG, Facebook, you know, just across the board. And my website is coolbobblove, KOOLBOBLOVE.com. You can find where to purchase the book online. Support your black and brown, Asian owned brick and mortar mom and pop stores. You know, I've been blessed to have some incredible support from them. I also have a street team selling my book at West 4th, at Doodle Buyers in the Bronx.
Woo.
You know, I got sneaker resellers pushing my book to, you know, the cats that know who I am in that space. Like, I'm full out.
That's tough.
I got record stores, Poise and Best-Buy, Moods Music in Atlanta, De La Playa in Los Angeles, Lucky in Miami. Yo, I ain't waiting for nobody to get my book out there. So that's why I'm so grateful, because it's an indie publisher. You know, I'm a cat that's been indie as F, you know, for decades. So being on a podcast with y'all to express myself, to get my story out there is a blessing. And to everybody out there in the audience, be safe, be knowledgeable, and think about how we affect the rest of the world. All right, peace.
Yes, sir. Bobby Cool Bob Love on all socials, man. Make sure you follow that man, because he is a wealth of knowledge, man. And I'm sure he'll answer your DMs, you know what I'm saying, if you're respectful.
Yeah, that's right. I do. And speaking of health and the culture, make sure you eat your mashed potatoes, your applesauce,
you know what I'm saying?
Your buttery biscuits. Yeah. Cool Bob Love, baby.
Yes.
Y'all, don't stop the kid. Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? Victory, like you heard. Shout out to Min Tran, the freaky man, goddammit. Victor's in the building, but he's set up the lights and he dipped. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to P-Wizzy, Quinn's in the house. And of course,
Hassan Insane.
You know what I mean? Peace.
A victory light. A victory light.